Blog Talk Radio. Well, welcome to Continue Mission. I'm your co-host, Rich Kilblaine. The regular host, James McCormick, is in Orlando with his family. I saw photos on Facebook. Him and his kids have been at Disney World today, having a great time. So we're going to allow them to enjoy themselves. And so tonight's conversation is with Father Michael Pacella, who was absent last week. The discussion we had last week, I got some good feedback from that. And so we're going to continue that, and we're really going to bring in, you know, Father Michael's expertise on this, because what I'd gone through, if anyone hadn't heard it, was a study on all the school shootings and focusing on the mass school shootings to see what patterns are there and what gun control laws work or don't work. And now, I don't know if anybody has listened to Biden's passionate speech, appeal to Americans for gun control, but you can go on YouTube and type it in, and I think it's not that long. It's not that long. You can listen to the whole thing, and he knows he doesn't have the votes. they've passed a bill through, the Democrats have the majority, and they've passed a bill through the House, but Biden admitted he needs 10 GOP votes in the Senate, and he knows he doesn't have them. And he doesn't even have the Democratic votes, because Manchin is not going to vote for that. And I don't even think the Arizona Senator Seminole would vote for it either. Not even certain Bernie Sanders would vote for it. Now, so Biden laid out his proposal, and it was interesting because, as I'd mentioned before, if you go to any Democratic representatives webpage or even candidate, almost all of them, their position on Second Amendment is a cut and paste. It's almost identical, which if you do that comparison, you will conclude they have an agenda. Okay. And so in Biden's passionate appeal, he proposed, you know, the gun ban, the assault weapons ban again. But then he also would back off and say, but as a minimum, you know, like, for example, and this one would make sense, and that is raise, you know, I didn't know Texas had an age limit on buying handguns. I thought everybody could buy a handgun, but no, you have to be 21. Well, if they have that policy for handguns, I can go with it. You know, you're not allowed to buy assault weapon until you're 21. Can't drink either, unless. But here's the thing: I think if you put a caveat in there that anybody serving in the armed forces, and he mentioned, you know, when they say, well, you know, you want to raise the age limit on being able to buy an assault weapon to 21, but what about 18-year-olds serving in the military? And then he admitted, but they are properly trained. Well, I said, well, if they're properly trained, then they should be allowed to buy it. And the reason I agree with that is, you don't want to serve your country, wait till you're 21 to buy an AR-15. But for everybody else, this is, could be a recruiting tool right there. Okay, but typical Biden, he got some things wrong in his little presentation. And, you know, I'd brought those up the last time. You know, he said that the assault, you know, study showed that the assault weapons ban worked. No, only one study claimed that it did reduce, but all the others said it had little to no effect. The assault weapons ban had little to no effect. And if you go through and you look at the number of mass school shootings before, during, there's really no change. In fact, like I said, the one of the worst school shootings, Columbine, took place during the assault weapons ban, and it involved high-capacity magazines and also the weapons that were on the ban. Keep in mind, the ban only prevented manufacturing of new weapons or magazines. It wasn't making 30-round magazines illegal, and that's the whole point. There are so many high-capacity magazines out there. Really, all you're going to do is raise the value of mine, all right? You're just going to make them cost a little bit more, all right? But so he was incorrect on those two statements, but he was correct, and we pointed that out. After the assault weapons ban was lifted and expired in 2004, there was a spike in school shootings and mass shootings. But they didn't all involve the weapons on the ban. In fact, a lot of the school shootings, the Virginia Tech was all handguns, okay? And several of them, handguns and shotguns. Else happened. Something changed in America. It wasn't the availability of guns. And you got to understand, I'm from Oklahoma. You know, I grew up when, you know, everybody had gun racks in the back of their pickup, and they drove to school with hunting rifles there. Nobody got shot. No one would ever think about school shooting. The first school shooting, mass shooting, I mean, school shootings, yes, they took place revenge-based, okay, a teacher, girlfriend, bully, upset somebody with a gun and they went after them. Okay. Mass shootings tend to be, well, I think they can't, we were counting four or more. The first mass school shooting was 1966 with the Texas Clock Tower. And it was like two or three copycat shootings right after that, all involving high velocity hunting rifles. Okay. So the real problem here is the idea of killing innocent people. And for why, okay? And what our conclusion was last week is there is an evil. There is we have entered a godless time in America, and there is an evil. Now I was having a good debate with a friend of mine. Even if we might agree on something, we'll still like to debate. And he said, well, those kids that did the shootings came from Christian families. Okay, I didn't see that, but that doesn't necessarily mean just because they were raised in a church that they, you know, are still believers. Okay, so with that, now we're going to get Father Michael's take on this. Okay, so Father Michael, how you doing?
Okay. Been a banner week, I thought it was very interesting because, as you know, I went into the military at 17, and I believe you were 18, and you know, so everything you're putting in perspective is very helpful because there's so much emotion and so much polarization that's been going on in the conversations, and I really appreciate the lucid, calm, historical perspective that you presented. One of the things that concerns me most, because I've done exorcisms and I've seen evil face to face, is just how hatred and nurturing resentment leads to murder. And we can analyze each of these situations, you know, bullying, all these different things and how it's pent up. And it's very interesting because in scripture, it says when God spoke to Cain, the first murderer, sin is crouching at your door, but you must master it. And I think we need to talk a little bit about self-mastery. I heard a sheriff from Florida talking this week, And he talked about how the nuns used to slap us on the hands with rulers. And he was saying how parents are afraid to discipline their children, you know, because of the laws. They're going to call up family services and so on and so forth. And so I hope that we can look at this whole situation in a full manner. You know, when you've experienced love, you want to share love with others. And you want to do service, especially when you know all of the great things that God has done for us eternally, as well as the benefits we've experienced. Many of us have had many good things in our lives. And now you want to give back. You know, my father was a 100% disabled vet, and I went in, but because after I was in a war zone, my father died, and I was sole surviving son, and I got out because of that after like 16 months. And afterwards, I felt a call that I needed to go back to give back, to serve out of the love and all that God had done and all the military had done for me. So I think it's a big thing. And I also think we need to talk about forgiveness, because resentment and nursing a grudge will lead to murder. And we really want to talk about that. You know, Scripture says, don't be overcome by evil, but instead overcome evil with good. That's because good and God is greater and more powerful than evil. Humanity has a heart problem. You know, you'll kill with anything. I don't know if you saw it today, this young man that ran over a woman and her child. He was going down a wrong way on a road, and he sped away afterwards. There's a lot of hatred, and you can do it in many, many ways. So you can't talk about an inanimate particular tool and say that's the problem, when it's the heart of humanity. Now, when hatred builds up, and I've dealt with this and I've seen it in a severe manner, there's really a resentment and a revenge that wants to pay back. But on the other hand, when we understand love, and I'm not talking about some gushy, you know, feely-touchy, I'm talking about demonstration. You know, God so loved the world, he gave. Love is action, and it builds up, and it's caring, and it shows acts of kindness. You know, it seems like the evil person wants to take away others' lives and take away things, where the more loving person wants to give and wants to share. And so these are some of the things that I want to address. I know there are psychological issues. I know that there are demonic issues. There are medical issues. But I think we need to understand that it seems like even in the home, there's so much hatred, and there's just not a sense of propriety and civility and kindness, you know, stuff that you maybe would have learned in the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts and things of that nature, you know, customs and courtesies like we learned in the military. So I'd like to lead us in that and say, why is it? You know, we know the heart is deceitful above all. Who can know it? But God gives a new heart. And we want to ask the question, why is there so much hatred and envy? See, when you look at Cain and Abel, that was really the issue. It was envy. And there's resentment because we, you know, kind of nurse a grudge. And so why is there, and the scripture even talks about the latter days where the love of many would wax cold. But why is it that that environment of love and heat, if you will, warmth, is not there? And there's just so much hatred and competition. So if we could kind of address that a little bit, I would like to share some of my thoughts?
Go for it, because
okay.
I'm asking that same question too while you're talking. It's like,
okay,
so what was the motivation of all these shooters? Was it hatred? Or was it, you know, one of the studies the FBI came up with is when they profiled these people, the one thing they found consistent was they did this for attention. They knew that if they walked in and killed a lot of innocent kids, that they would their name and their face would dominate the news for weeks, okay? And so, and, you know, the media was falling for it. And finally, they got the message and they said, no, this is true. They started backing off. And what you're finding now is they will mention the name and maybe show a photo of that person one time or one day, and that's it. And then they move away and they focus on the victims instead of focusing on the shooter, the assailant, okay? And what we found was kind of a decline, or at least a pause in the shootings, okay? So that motivation may not necessarily be hatred, but it definitely
My daughter did a paper in high school about the very thing you're talking about, the notoriety and how we kind of exalt them, you know, kind of heroes like, you know, Al Capone and so on and so forth. And I think you're absolutely right. But, Rich, let's get down to the basics, the home. And I know people have free choice. The absence of fatherhood, affirmation, approbation. I think there's a lot of lacks in our culture. And the outcome is because you're not getting that attention, that love. I remember watching a person that was involved in being a sexual predator. And he would wait for runaways at bus stations. This happened to be in California. And he said to the parents right on TV when he was being interviewed, if you won't love them, I will. Now, that's not love. That's exploitation. But I think there are some basic things, building blocks, that foster this type of thing. You know, when you and I were in basic training, we saw people who really didn't have a good upbringing. They didn't have the basics. And I remember talking to a drill sergeant when I was a chaplain at Fort Leonard Wood for a season. And he said, we have to do in 8 weeks what some parents haven't done in 18 years. So I do think that, you know, the whole environment of bullying where parents allow their children to get away with that, or they don't have the proper supervision. And so all these things are contributing to the buildup of hatred, which leads to murder. So I think we have to look at some of these basic things. I mean, people need to be loved, affirmed, accepted. They need to be secure. Now, this last person's family life, the mother with the grandparents, the father's absent, these are all contributing factors. I'm not suggesting that people don't have free will, that they don't make choices, that they don't allow certain things to influence them. But they're hurting, and you've heard the saying, hurt people hurt people. They're hurting, and so they want others to feel their pain. So I think that, you know, they fall through the cracks for some reason. You know, we're not able to reach them, and oftentimes they're eccentric and they're kind of outcasts. But really, I mean, even the Gadarene demoniac, you know, with a legion of demons, when Jesus confronted him, you know, with his purity and love, it arrested his hatred. And I have seen it, you know, in exorcisms and in deliverance. But I think basically when hatred is unchecked, and you keep feeding it and feeding it, you no longer have it. It has you. That's why I talked about self-mastery earlier. God said to Cain, you must master it. But if you're nursing something and it gets to be bigger than you, you can't control it. It controls you. You become enslaved to it. And there's just too much polarization, too many messages of hatred and put down. Even in dialogue, even in debate, there's so much ad hominem. And we just injure people. And when you injure someone, you know, they meditate upon that and they blow it out of proportion. And before you know it, they're conniving in their minds how they can get back at you. And so I think some of these issues are very, very basic, but we've allowed hatred to go unchecked. And, you know, it's interesting because bad attitudes precede bad actions. And I will deal with people that I have charge over. If I sense an attitude, I know that's the precursor of a bad action. And I think sometimes, you know, and Jesus would have oftentimes said, why think you evil in your heart? He knew it was in their hearts. That's why he talked about when you lust after a woman in your heart and all these things that take place in your heart. If you don't deal with your heart, it deals with you. And so I really think we've got to tone it down. We've got to talk more compassionately to one another. I'm not talking about, you know, even when I was in the Army and I was at basic training as a chaplain, watching the drill sergeants discipline the soldiers. I'm not talking about not disciplining. I'm not talking about being sickeningly sweet. But I am saying about showing care and showing concern to break down some of that bitterness.
Well, you know, the discussion you're having right now really sounds more like not related so much related to the mass shootings as it is to the division in America and politics. The left and the right are completely unable to talk. I mean, I just saw an excerpt from The View where. See, they can't even get a conservative on their show anymore. They can't, you know, because they would always have, like, one conservative to present the other side, and they just get beat up. And so there's no conservatives on there. So all of them, it's like, we need to do away with the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Do away with the Republican Party. Like, so people that shouldn't have a choice. That's basically what the message the left is saying. But I'm sure the right saying the same thing. Well, I don't think, no, I think, you know, but the leftist agenda is also like, well, like I said, part of their hidden agenda is suppressing the freedom of speech. They don't want to hear any opposing views. The right, most people are living in echo chambers, the left and the right. You know, on social media, they have completely you know, cut themselves off from each other. And keep in mind, you know, all I ever did was when one of my liberal friends would post something stupid, I would comment on it. And I would bring up the fact, and it would offend them. And I never insulted anyone or stuff. I just bring up the fact. And they would get so upset. And finally, you know, they would block me or unfriend me. And this is where we are on social media. I don't think anyone on the right has any liberal friends. I don't think anyone on the left has any conservative friends. No one's talking. I have this one retired colonel. We met on funny because we got into a debate, and the fact was both of us were presenting very rational and intelligent debates. He's like, we need to take this. Email. And we did. And turns out he's a retired DC colonel. There's a lot of times, you know, we go off, we start talking, well, by the way, so what'd you do here? What'd you do there? And I'm like, wow, wait a minute. I need that story. And we have a lot of respect for each other, but we do enjoy the debate, okay? And it's an intelligent and very respectful and civil debate. We have that, but it doesn't exist out there. So I don't see that necessarily leading to a lot of shootings. It may lead to burning of cities, you know, Main Street and stuff like that. But we can't talk.
The average disposition person that's antagonistic and hostile, you know, I teach critical thinking on the college level. There needs to be a conversion of our hearts where when we're stealing, taking from others, rather than sharing, you know, the scripture is very explicit about that he who steals, steal no more, work with his hands and share. I think our nation needs a conversion of its soul. And I do think that we're feeding hatred, and the immature, the under 21, in many cases, they hear this rhetoric and they can't handle it and process it like a real adult will. You know, I know Dr. Ben Carson says your brain is really not totally developed to about age 30, not 25, about age 30. And so some of these
I just read there's a report, an article that just came out in the Wall Street Journal addressing that. And it said your cerebral cortex, the frontal lobe of your brain, which has the reasoning and rationing or whatever, is not fully developed until it's like 24 or something like that. And they pointed out that, you know, so really being able to determine right and wrong, we're not fully mature at that before 21.
And that's why.
My point is, the brain has not, the development of the brain has not changed over millennium. It's only recently that everybody wants to kill each other, okay, in the schools. We didn't have that problem when I was growing up, and our brains were developing at the same rate. So something else is
That's
busy.
What I'm saying. Things are being fed, and these young people can't process it. They're inundated on the internet. You know, I told you about David Grossman's book on killing. I got to meet him at Fort Bragg. He went to Ranger School with one of my chaplains, who was also 18th Airborne Soldier of the Year, Special Forces, but he was a chaplain, and, you know, later. And a lot of the formation that's taking place is really a malformation. It's really a deformation. And so what's being built into them is not proper in the way they should be processed because they don't have the level of maturity. And I'll go more with Dr. Ben Carson and his expertise in the Wall Street Journal. And he says it's closer to 30. That's not to make an excuse, Rich, for people that are acting civilly because of their training. Again, going back to the home, we don't have training in manners anymore. People don't even sit down for dinner. There's not a structure so that you understand how even a little business works. So there's such a breakdown that these children do not have the apparatus even to deal with decisions of right and wrong. They haven't had those things portrayed in front of them. They've been bad examples, bad models. We see that in government. We see that in the church. We see that in politics. We see that among athletes. So a lot has changed as far as the moral fabric of our society. And now they don't have the moral compass to make reasonable decisions as regards morality. Now, we're told that these young people, if we're paying attention, will torture animals. And so this should give us a sign there's something desperately wrong here. If a child, I had a soldier, he was into some animism, I believe it was when I was in Korea, and they used to cut the heads of cats off and bury them. It was all part of his religion, and we really got to talk about demonic stuff as well. But I just think that developmentally, Rich, the society, and like you said, we can't talk in the public square. It's all propaganda in the schools. We've got a lot of divisions. And even in the church, both we've seen in high church, low church, sexual predators, moral breakdown. And then we wonder why the children are acting out in this way. And I really do. I think we let them grow up too quickly, too much too soon. They see things that they're not ready to process. And I think that is what builds a mass shooter. It's a very basic thing that starts with the home, with moral training, with discipline, and so on and so forth. And but we're not being the adult in the room. You were mentioning about different shows on TV. You can see how people treat each other. I saw two very intelligent men, I won't mention their names, and they were going to have a debate. And the one person who's so highly esteemed, he went after this man's jugular vein. I just shut it off. I mean, there's no sense of propriety, dignity, or any sense of listening. And that's why I think, you know, their children are on edge. And again, we have to look at violence in the home. We have to look at the insecurity. Many of the children that are growing up from divorced parents have a lot of resentment, or maybe they blame themselves. You know, things happen. We're in a fallen world. I'm not blaming or pointing fingers at anyone, but I'm saying as a community, even as a church community, as a small town type of community, we need to come together and fill in the lacks for these young people. I know, you know, my uncles, because my father wasn't really functional and he was very violent, my uncles tried to fill the gap, and certainly going into military at a young age. And then there were other church leaders. And you need that development. And I knew that I had to really embrace it in order for me to give it to my son. If I didn't have it, I couldn't give it. And so I do think that this is directly related to the subject that we're talking about.
Well, here's my question for you. Were you really raising your kids? Did I raise my kids? Are we raising our kids, or are they being raised by somebody else? You know where I'm going with this?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many hours a day do you have your kids? Did you have your kids? Yours are grown up, so are mine.
Mm-hmm.
They're spending most of their time in this. They're being raised by the teachers, okay? And then when they come home, how much are we engaging with them? How much TV are they watching? The thing is, what I have observed about the current younger generation, and we've run into this into the military, there's two patterns coming out of them. One, they know it all. They're smarter than their parents, okay? They will not listen to an adult. And I blame that. I'm gonna throw out Disney, but it's all the other channels that cater to the kids. That when I watched those kid shows, all the parents were stupid. The kids were the smartest members of the family.
Right.
The parents were always stupid. And so our kids grew up on those shows. And the other, and so it's like you can't give them any advice. And they come into the military, and the NCOs are trying to tell them how to do their job, and they want to act like they already know it. They resent being told how to do things the right way. And there is, it is so bad. I have watched videos on advising bosses on how to deal with these millennials. It's like we're having to bend over backwards to and grow you into the workforce when it's like, hey, you want to work for me? Here's the rules. But the thing is, it's a generation thing. If we don't,
there's a lot of competing things. I agree with you with the time and the TV and games. You could ask my wife. I mean, you know her. I really did spend a considerable time with my family. Now, of course, I was in Korea.
Talking about you. I'm talking about
I'm not just trying to put my – what I'm saying is that we have this competition and all these other influences, you know, and we are going to have to give an account, okay? And it's easy, and you see this with parents I have, who just put their kids in front of the TV as a babysitter or give them an iPad. You know what I'm saying? And so we kind of relinquish our responsibility.
Yeah.
And the Bible tells us about teaching them and modeling for them and things of that nature, because you know how quickly they grow up. And not that they don't still need counsel. I hear from my kids all the time, and I'm grateful for that. But I think that this is true. The culture has raised them, but we have to win them back, because we know that they're not going to be productive. We know that they're not going to succeed in the real world with the philosophy of the contemporary world. And so I do think that, you know, we have that responsibility. We brought them into the world, or in my case, we adopted them. We took responsibility for them. And, you know, we had a very hard situation. You're aware with my daughter who passed.
Right.
She would have been 30 years old this June 11th, Allison. And, you know, you feel sometimes, you know, you lose one, so to speak. But you're in the fight. And I just think that as a community, Rich, and I think we're doing a community service right now, maybe one man can't talk to his son or another person can't talk to their daughter. But together, maybe some other people that are younger or have an experience that someone respects, we have to salvage our children together. You know, it's our children in the same way that we say our father, because we're a family. And, you know, praying for each other's children. But I know when I lived in the projects in Newark, New Jersey, if I was doing something wrong, one of my mother's neighbors would hit me upside my head. I mean, they realized that you were a part of that community, and they knew your mother and father, and they would out you, could be said. Even when we were in church, at the end, the nun would, you know, call you out for what you were doing during Mass. And, of course, my older sister would go and tattletale on me. But I just feel like we've lost that sense that, you know, I'm my brother's keeper. And I just wish that, you know, we would take more of a concern for one another so that we could help people carry the load. Let's talk especially about single mothers. My mother basically raised us herself. She was raised in an institution. She was very militant, strict, so she could handle it. I was the only boy. But I think there are a lot of single mothers that need a big brother or kind of a surrogate father. And the church and other people should provide those types of things, because we need that development. We need a mother and a father. irrespective if we're a female or a male. We need that developmental stuff. And, you know, Boys Club, there's been a lot of good things. The Scouts, there's been a lot of good things that have tried to help in that fashion. But we're dropping the ball, Rich, in some of these ways. And I'm not saying you could save everyone, okay, like the young man that went in and shot those people after being with them in a Bible study in South Carolina. I mean, there's evil. There's demonic powers that you cannot reason with, or you can't love. They're trying to manifest their evil. But I think we can do a better job. And, you know, you and I both work with young people, and, you know, you build a relationship, you take an interest in them. We've had some students together. And I know, to some extent, Rich, we've made an impact on their lives, you know, as little as it might be. We still made an impact, and I think that's what we should be doing.
Well, the ones I've made an impact on are the ones that are seeking advice, okay? I teach Aikido, and the majority of, I'd say the vast majority, probably like 9 out of 10 people that try out for Aikido are going to drop it, all right? It's just too difficult for them. And then when I say difficult, it's just you don't see the progress. Progress is over years. In teaching at CNU, you know, most of my students were ROTC graduates. And the same thing as teaching in the Army Logistics University. Well, you know, I was Airborne, Ranger, Special Forces. I did all the stuff these guys would wish they could have done, okay? So I already had what we would call the cool points, all right? And so, but once I started talking history, I knew that my job was to entertain them, but I was really talking to a few students. And then when I'm teaching, I was teaching high school for your wife's, and there's a few students that I connected with, okay? There's one that actually wanted to put the gloves on with me, and I laughed about that. And I'm laughing as I'm walking, because we're going to break early. We're going to break like, 15 minutes. And you got to understand, I don't know if you've ever watched it. I'm sure you've watched the movie To Serve with Love, right? And there's a scene in there where, now keep in mind, these are seniors, and there's a scene in there where the tough guy challenges, you know, Sidney Poitier's character into boxing. Sidney's, you know, he's an engineer. He's not a good boxer. He's trying to be defensive. And then he gets a guy in the gut and doubles him over, and he's apologizing for it. And I'm going, well, this is not going to be that scene. I walk over to the board, and I write on the whiteboard, and I'm going like, before you ever put the gloves on with me, you have got to look up this video, Aikido v. Boxing, and go to the end of it. It's about 17 minutes. Go to about like 15-minute mark and watch my bag workout, all right? You need to see, because it's 10th graders, I said, you need to see how hard and fast I hit a bag before you ever put the gloves on me. I mean, I can't even play around with you because I can hit you with so much power and not know it, okay? But I'll coach it. I went outside and I coached him on it. And it became pretty obvious that it would have been a bad idea to try to spar with me. But it was fun. They're all good kids, though. I like them. I like them. I've been telling that story so many times. You know, so the kid gave me another good story. You know, I don't have too many good teaching stories, but there's others that have reached out. But you got to understand, again, that's a private school and it's a Christian school. The vast majority of the kids were losing them. How do you get their attention? You know, you have to it's like, I can't undo what you're – no, it's undoing what television has done. Because the first thing I said was, one, they think all adults are stupid. The second thing is they believe they're privileged, okay, mm-hmm. that they deserve everything. You know, when as a young lieutenant coming into the Army, you're going, okay, a successful career is making it to 20. Okay, what rank should I be? Well, in 17 years, you're eligible for lieutenant colonel. Okay, so to mark my career as a success as a lieutenant colonel, I'd need to command a battalion. And so almost everybody of my generation going, if you made lieutenant colonel and you got to retire and you commanded a battalion, you had a successful career. And we have, you know, the new generations of lieutenants are coming in thinking they're going to make full colonel and command brigades. Like, guys, you have any idea what the competition is like? But they really, you know, the thing is, they come in here thinking, no, they deserve it. They, you know, the washout rate in the Special Forces Corps, you know, is so high. Seriously, I have a friend, I have a relative, I'll tell you, a relative, I can't say what his name and all that. I have a relative that went through the Q Corps, and he told me, it's like they lost the majority. I mean, I can't even remember how many people quit in the first 3 hours of selection.
Wow.
Like, what were you thinking? What were you thinking? You know, did you do your homework? Did you, you know, at least for my relative, I when he started talking about going into special operations, I had him watch that on YouTube. There's a document they have. It's called 2 Weeks in Hell. That's back when selection mm-hmm. was 2 weeks long. Now it's 3 weeks long. I said, you need to watch that to mentally prepare yourself for what you're going to encounter. I can tell you a lot of tricks, but you've got to mentally think that. No, I think they all walk in there going, I want to be a Green Beret, and therefore I'm going to be a Green Beret. And it doesn't work out. And one of the I train in a dojo across the river. Oh, well, see, I'm of that martial arts generation that you should always be training under someone better than you. Yeah, I've been doing Aikido for 26 years, teaching for 11. I have my own dojo. But every Saturday, if I'm not sparring with Amanda, I'm over at Jim Baker's Aikido of Norfolk dojo training, because that guy's been training 21 years longer than me. Okay, mm-hmm. And he's a student of Hal Lehrman, okay? So we all have to train under someone better. But anyway, in his school, I trained with two guys who both went through Navy SEALs BUD course and rang the bell. Mm-hmm. You rang the bell. Mm-hmm. Ringing the bell means you quit. You know, it's right. Like, so you quit, you get a chance to come back, you quit. You got three chances. If you ring the bell three times, you can never come back again. Now, the Special Forces Corps, if you want to keep trying, they'll invest the money in you, okay? They'll keep you there. But most of them wash out so soon and get out of there. But anyway, so this guy, one of the guys, he rang the bell three times. And then he decides he wants to be a pararescue in the Air Force. And he washes out of that. And I'm like, you know, I was Airborne Ranger Special Forces. Why did you not talk to me? I would advise you not to go into that. I said, go into the Army and go for SF or go for the Rangers. Now, I didn't know this, that if I'd advise him to go for the Rangers, which the waiting list is so long, that I said, no, they do not send you to airborne school before they send you the Ranger Induction Program, RIP. All right, so if you wash out a RIP, guess what? You ain't nothing. But before you can even go to pre-selection in the SF course, the 18 X-ray, you got to go to jump school. They rush you through jump school so quick, then put you on a bus and send you to Bragg, soon to be called Fort Liberty. All right, thank you, wokeness. But anyway. So if you wash out of the Q course, guess what? You're airborne. So you're going to end up in the 82nd, or you're going to end up in the Ranger Battalion. And, you know, but here's a guy, he knew what my background was. We trained together. Did he ever come up and ask me for advice?
That's a good point that you've been making about younger people. You know, my friend Dave Scro, it's like an 8-degree black belt, Tang Sido Mudquan, and also San Kil, and he's done other stuff. But he reaches out to people in other countries, you know, as a missionary, but through the vehicle of karate. And that really reaches a lot of young people. I think there's a real longing, and you would know this firsthand, for discipline. You know, I can remember the biggest screw-up in my junior high school wound up going into the Marines. There's a longing when your life's out of control for someone to help you put it in order. And I just think that we can, and you're absolutely right, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. There are some young people that are stubborn, prideful, not teachable, and you can't teach someone who thinks they know everything already.
Right.
There is an aspect of, let me just finish the thought. There's an aspect of too much too soon they can't handle. But even when I grew up, you know, joining a gang, most of the guys that I was with were fatherless. Even if they had a father in the home, they weren't functional. And so these other guys were pushing us around. We had to do all kinds of stuff. I mean, and, you know, you kind of like embraced it because you were longing for the discipline that you didn't have in your own life.
Well, you know, the gang was the studies have shown the gang's providing the family that the family doesn't provide, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, when we go back to people, first of all, anybody joining the military, anybody going into the dojo, wanting to study karate, they are seeking to improve themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, once they get there, are they willing, do they really understand what they have to do to improve themselves, all right? You know how good a boxer I am, all right? I was the 154-pound champion at West Point, and I still train on the bag, and I'm good. And, anybody sees me, you know, I've always worked out on the bag. And any chance I get to spar with someone, I spar. Last June, a year ago, I went into a Muay Thai school and spent a day sparring with him. Got my ribs cracked, took my punishment, but I sparred with him. And the instructor, he's a professional fighter. I didn't stand a chance, okay? Now, I'm not going to try to beat this guy. It's his dojo. But with his students, I held my own. There was one guy, when we went to boxing, he couldn't even touch me. I had the moves. I'm like, man, I can slip all his punches, duck, all that. I was surprised how well I moved it. I was 66, okay? Now I'm 67.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, anytime I walked into the gym, you know, a lot of times I walk in there, and any people will see me working out. They can tell when I'm hitting that bag, I know what I'm doing. And I get guys coming up all the time asking me to coach them. And I finally got to the point where I would, you know, what I usually did was I said, okay, hit the back. Just hit the back. Now, they all think punching is coming from the upper body. It's not. I'm watching from the waist down. The power comes from your lower body, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm watching these guys for a few minutes, and I figured out everything they're doing wrong. This is how you're supposed to punch. And we will spend the next 30 minutes working on straight punches. That's the left and the right, the straight punches. The jab, the cross. And, you know, it's like there's no point in doing anything else until you get these two punches down. Okay? And here's what
are
I would tell
these young
them.
People,
said, okay,
for the most
part?
Yeah,
these guys in the Army. They're definitely young people. They're 18, 20, 21, whatever. But they want to all be boxers. And the thing is, I go on, look, I'm not going to make any special arrangements to come in to train you. These are the days and the hours I come into this gym to work out. You want me to coach you, you be here at this time. And I rarely see those guys again. Why?
We used to have smokers.
I'm a good, they can definitely tell. I know what I'm doing. You know, and I sit there and I'll spend 30 minutes coaching them on how to do, you know, two punches, the straight jab, the straight right, and I'll never see him again. Why? I'll tell you why. Because they want results fast.
Yeah.
They don't want to build a foundation. They don't want to put that vast majority of people come in to ask me to coach them cannot do the slow, methodical process that I develop myself in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I teach Aikido the same way. Now, for me, this is great because Aikido, like I said, Aikido already has a high washout rate. And I want the people who are willing to invest the time and the effort, you know, because the way I teach is, you know, I get a new person in, I got to build a good foundation. So, look, I teach so I can practice. I'm letting my students throw me. I'm throwing them. It's my workout. I got to build them up to a level that they can challenge me. But when I get a beginner in here, I have to sit there and work with that beginner to make sure he or she develops the foundation so then I can turn them over to my other students. Now, fortunately, I've got one student who's studying for his black belt test. So, you know, hey, you've got to learn how to start teaching beginners, and that'll free me up, okay? So I'm turning a lot more of that over to him so I can go and play with the advanced students. But the point being is, the majority of people I work with, all right, they all want quick results. They don't want to invest the time and the effort.
Let's talk about mentoring for a minute. Rich, because I think you're touching something that's lacking. I think that when people would apprentice or, you know, sit at the feet of a great master like a Michelangelo or someone, there was really a cost to be paid if a person really wanted to learn. And I really think that there are a lot of people that are lost. They don't know what their purpose is. They don't know what they really love or the gifts they've been endowed with. And I do think that as adults, we have to be more willing to invest in the generations beneath us. But I agree with you that they have to be willing. But my question is, how can we put a desire in them that they are willing to pay the price, that they are willing to, you know, take the time in order to master something? I think we were raised, and it started when you and I were teenagers, in everything fast food. You know, I remember the McDonald's when I was in high school, you know, and everything's fast. People don't see the importance of savoring the stew or the soup and for hours and hours cooking it. And I think that even a craft like you're talking about, that you've invested so many years, and I know that my karate master as well, I mean, and so many years, and then, you know, with the Filipino knife and stick fighting and all this different stuff, I think that young people don't have an interest outside of their little boxes. And I think this is causing them to not hallucinate, but to fantasize about things that are not real. And then, like you said, they're looking for notoriety and they want to do something because they don't feel like they're worth anything. And so they want to make a name for themselves. And it's unfortunate.
Right.
You know, we don't give that kind of approbation.
Well,
and mentoring.
The thing is, I ain't giving nothing away. I'm training, okay?
Uh-huh.
The reality, what I find is, all right, they have the, you talk about fantasy. I think that word probably fit the description of most of them. They have this, a lot of people who walk into any martial arts school has an illusion that they're going to be a great martial artist without an understanding or an appreciation for the amount of work that is going to go into it. Okay. And when I introduce them, like I can, all right, I can tell you, okay, one of the students I had in your wife's school is wants to be a writer. I'm a published writer. My ninth book is now out in print. They were the Rough Riders. I'm a published writer. I'm like, I can teach you how to write better, and I can teach you how to get published. Okay? What's your genre, all this. And then I had, it's a senior class, I had them all write papers for me. She got offended by the corrections I made on her paper. And, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm like trying to point, I'm like every, grammatically every sentence was good. But when you put them all together, it didn't flow. And I'm saying, you're following all the English rules. But you don't capture my interest. This story doesn't flow. And instead of trying to write, I was started out and I was like rewriting, like here's comments on each one. Finally, I'm like, no, let me just rewrite your paragraph and show you what a good paragraph sounds like using what she was saying. And it turned out better than I could have imagined. I expected, okay? It was really a good paragraph, and it was saying everything she was trying to say. I said, I can teach you how to write like this. Do you think I heard back from her?
Mm-mm.
No.
No, I hear you.
I'm a Yeah, you got to understand. You have a high school substitute teacher walks in who's a professional historian, a published author. You want to be a published author? He's a published author, and he can teach you how to write the way he does, and you don't even seek his advice. What is wrong here? We're not even talking martial arts.
What I think happens sometimes, I remember reading a book called Dedication and Leadership, and it was about how the communists trained some of their people. They throw them out into the street, couldn't answer questions that people had. They were just zealous. Then they realized they were ready to learn. I want to say something more about the disregard for life and the disregard for the sacredness of life. And I want to be delicate the way I say this, but we've killed, since Roe v. Wade, 65 million children in the womb. And it's amazing to see how appalled people are, you know, when these poor children have been massacred and murdered. But we don't connect the dots. We don't see that there's a disposable sense of life, disregard for life, just blow it away. And a lot of it has come through Hollywood. You know, they talk about violence, but you look at things and it's like, you know, they're going to disregard this person, destroy this person. Even when my children were playing video games and they'd say, you're dead. And I just would intervene. I say, you're out. And I want you to have this mentality. And David Grossman's book also dealt with that, where you're desensitized to the reality and the sacredness of life that's made in God's image. And so I think that has happened as well. I mean, all the murders, you know, my cousin is a police officer in Chicago. It's unbelievable how, you know, for turf or whatever it is, you know, same ethnicity or whatever it is, and it's just, you know, you're going to blow somebody away. Like, and when you go back to the Noahic covenant, God says when we shed the blood of a person that's made in the image of God, that's a capital crime. You know, they should also have their life forfeited. I believe in mercy and I believe in forgiveness, but there's such a disregard. I mean, my friend who was in prison for 8.5 years for murder before he became a Christian, He saw 8 murders in front of his eyes. He was in a gladiator fighting prison down in Florida. And he said one murder that he saw was from 50 cents in a card game. Now, how do we get there, Rich, where there's such a disregard? And I'm not talking about time for war and the time for peace. I'm not talking about, you know, evil. I'm just talking about how do we get to the place where our conscience don't even bother us when we kill our own children in the womb. And,
well,
and it's just a disposable sense of life.
Right. That's what we covered last week. Okay, because the point is, yeah, the thing is, how do we go from, I mean, first of all, God has been removed. See, we're not raising our kids. That's one of the things I want to point out. We only have a small amount of contact with him, and what are we achieving doing there? And then what is the competition? It's television. It's video games. It's the teachers. Okay, now there used to be teachers taught the same values that the parents had. Actually, they taught.
Right,
that's
right.
What they did. They taught. They didn't indoctrinate. They taught.
That's
now we got all these damn agenda. We are not. We're having trouble raising our kids because everybody else is involved in raising them. And let's look at the leftist agenda. They want to raise our kids. They don't want. Parents, they have the choice of what school they send them to. They want them to go to public schools because, and they want to tell the public schools what they're going to teach them. They're going to indoctrinate these kids. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we lose that. Now, we've also, the left has taken God. Now, all right, I'm picking, because we're discussing, you know, love, God, all this. So I'm picking on the left, all right? The conservatives have their problems too, okay? But on this issue right here, there is no God in the liberal agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you admit there's a God, you admit that an unborn fetus has a soul, and that means abortion is murder. So
that's
you
right.
have to reduce that unburned, because I got in the debate with some liberals. It's just tissue. It's just tissue. My body. Not that there's another body in my body. There's another soul in my body. Because when I brought that up, the thing was, I kept saying, you know, Emanuel Swedenborg wrote about it. Unborn children have souls. They go to paradise. They're raised. And the near-death experiences that I've been watching, some of them point out, they see children in heaven that are being raised. Aborted children go to heaven. So they have souls. That would be murder. But you have God. And I love to quote, you know, AOC when she said, the facts don't matter when you know you're morally right. What's your moral compass? You know, it's like if you do not see, most cultures are ruled by some form of religion. Religion, and it's different from culture to culture. The three main religions are Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, and then you have Hindu and all these others. All right, but they all, it's kind of a common acceptance on what's right and wrong. If you're not willing to accept, you know, the belief that there is a God, then what is your moral compass based on? What you think is right or wrong? So for those kids who are going in there and shooting other people, do you think they believe they were doing evil?
Not to the extent that a formed conscience would. No, you're absolutely right.
Well, for another thing, I want to point something else out is, so if there is no God, there's no heaven or hell. So is there any consequence for going in and killing all these kids? If you don't believe in God, You don't believe in a heaven, hell. You don't believe in internal damnation. So you when you die, you die, and you're really hoping people, you get your message. All you're doing is you're trying to send a message. I was tired of being bullied. Look, I want to be remembered. I'm a loser. I want people to remember me. You know, I want to live out this fantasy of a video game. There's no God. Because they believe there's no God. There is no consequences for this. You and I could not do this because we know that. I mean, you know, the older we get, I'm 67, you're older than that, and we're sitting there going, all my old rowdy Green Beret friends are all devout Christians as far as I know, because we're getting closer to that time frame, right? We know.
That's right.
Mean, I got classmates dying all around me all the time, and I'm going like, I know. My days are – I'm getting really close to the end of my expiration.
We're in the last
quarter.
I know.
In a bit.
That's right. Yeah.
That's right. But we're talking about people in who are, you know, a kid who's 18 years old. I don't even think he believes there's a God, let alone feared him.
Sure.
Because he's definitely, because I said, what did Jesus say about the children when he gathered them around him?
Such as the king.
About harming these children?
Oh, yeah. You should have a milestone around your neck and go to the deepest part of the sea.
What he was saying is the worst thing you could ever do is to hurt an innocent child. And we're not just talking about these shooters. We're talking pedophiles. Abusive parents. Abusive, because the damage that's done is permanent, or is almost always permanent.
That's right.
So the thing is,
God hates divorce because of what it does to the children. You're right.
Well, actually, I benefited from it, okay, because I got two good parents. I got two good fathers. You know, when you say divorces because you have that absentee father. No, my stepfather, my mother remarried. We pushed her to marry this guy because we liked him. And I had two fathers that loved me. And each of them taught me things. That's probably true. So I grew up, trash in Oklahoma, but I had the privilege of two fathers that loved me, and each one of them taught me things that the other couldn't have taught me. And that was my benefit, because my stepfather was an avid hunter and fisherman. You know, while everybody else is going to Disneyland or Six Flags over Texas for the summer, all we did was go fishing. But when I went into the Army, I had all the field craft skills I needed. You know, I knew how to clean game. Okay. When we got to Ranger School and they gave
me. Was your father in the same community?
He lived across the border. No, he lived in Kansas and lived about 25 miles away. And my we lived on the Oklahoma side of the border. My dad lived on the Kansas side of the border. And the joke was, because my mother hated him so much, he couldn't cross the Oklahoma border. My grandparents had to come pick us up for the weekend visit. But it was my dad who is an avid historian. He contributed to me becoming a professional historian. He influenced me in that. But it was my stepdad that taught me everything about, you know, how to survive in the wild. So I was lucky. You know, that was a divorce that benefited
me. Fortunate. And too much is given, much is required. And that's why you've been able to give so much to others, because God gave you so much to those people. But I think there are some, you know, children, and I heard this person's grandfather, you know, you think about the fact how you would, you know, shoot your grandmother in the face. I mean, something's terribly wrong.
It's called evil. That's what
wrong.
When you get it.
That's
called
that, exactly.
Evil. There's no other explanation for it. You shoot. Look, and that's not an isolated case. In many of these shootings, whether it's a school or a workplace, they killed their family members. They killed their loved ones. the one that is trying to influence them the most. So it's either
that escaped in Texas and then he killed five people while he was on the run. I mean,
these
are demons, that are trying to manifest themselves through who are weak-willed and just give themselves over, or they do certain things over and over again and make a place for them. And so I think, you know, we have to talk about evil and good, demons and God. I think that when we say that whatever we can't see is not real, you know, because we believe in things visible and invisible. You remember Bishop Barron saying recently about the great capacity of the dog's nose or ears and whatever. And sometimes we think that just because we can't quantify it in some natural way, that the reality is not there. I've seen even in people who were possessed of the devil, small people had such tremendous strength, you wouldn't believe it. And I know there are those who say, well, psychologically, if your child was under a car, you'd be able to pick it up, blah, blah, blah. No, there is an entity of evil, and it's really a deprivation because God made everything good, but there was choice that was made. And we have to face that fact that we have such entities that are influencing people in this world. And we better be on God's side because that's the only power that's greater than the
power. All right. So you're speaking to probably 30% of the audience here because the other 70% either doesn't believe in God or have their doubts. All right. So And you and I had a little bit of a conversation beforehand. There's a theory that man created God. God did not create man.
Mm-hmm.
That, and when you talk about agrarian societies where you're dependent on nature, you need to believe that there's some kind of higher authority that controls the weather and controls, you know, everything else. And
right. And
so we created God. So how, okay, so this is the almost a rhetorical question. How do we believe in God? All right. Now, you and I have different experiences. My mother was a fortune teller, okay?
Right.
And I have seen evil. I mean, like you talked about, you have been involved in exorcism. You have seen the manifestation of evil. And I've seen it too, and I'm like, I told you before, the devil is much more, he will manifest himself in front of you a lot better, quicker than God will.
He's boastful and prideful, right? Trying to
strut
stuff. Right.
Right. So here's the thing. So my point is, and this is what I was trying to get at in the last week's show, is, okay, these acts, killing children, walking into a schoolhouse and shooting children. This, you can't explain it any other way than pure evil. And there are other things out there that you can probably look at and go, that is a manifestation of pure evil. Mothers killing their babies.
Right.
It is instinctive. You know, you talk like mama bear. It is hardwired into our genes for a mother to protect her children, okay? It is hardwired into a man that he is supposed to be the provider and the protector, right? A lot of them abandon that. So you take a mother who is going to kill her children. That's contradictory to biology. It's contradictory to, you know, our genetics. How do you explain that? And when I did the research on that, almost all those women, mothers who killed their babies, said they heard God tell them to kill them. They heard voices, okay? The thing is, that's a manifestation of pure evil.
Right.
So my point is, while you may not have seen, so I say you may not have seen God. You may not realize that all love comes from God.
Mm-hmm.
But I guarantee listeners out there, you know what evil is. We've been watching it on the news. We know what evil is. Evil is intolerance. Okay, just go down the list of all the things. Describe evil. So if there is evil, there has to be good. There has to be a counter to that, okay?
Yeah.
That is God. And all love comes from God. Love is the counter to evil is love.
Right.
What I would develop this debate a little bit differently. I would start out with, how do we define evil? How do we recognize evil? And then go, what's the counter to evil is love. You started out with love from the beginning. Okay. So we're making a circle now. We're back to love. Okay. We know some of the manifestations of evil. Love is the counter to it. And so this is, look, I came to believe in, as I've been going to church ever since I could remember, but I was taught to believe this stuff. But it is when I finally realized that if there's evil there, I love how C.S. Lewis rationalized God. He became an atheist. He was raised as a Christian, became an atheist because he didn't see any of this. And rather than having a personal experience with God, this man, this intelligent man, was able to rationalize there has to be a God. Is we are seeing enough evil in the world right now that there has to be a God. Now, Bart Ehrman became an atheist. He was the fundamentalist Christian, became an atheist because to him it was the exact opposite. When he's looking at starving people in Africa and all this evil in the world, how could God allow that to happen? So you answer that question. If there is a God, how can he allow this 18-year-old kid to walk into his school and kill 19 children?
Because he has free will. God doesn't override our will. He could have made a world when we were robots, but then there wouldn't be the true choice of loving God and pleasing God. It would just be like your wife has to love you or your husband has to love you. I mean, that's the risk that God took. I want to share an experience quickly. I'll never forget it as long as I live. It was January 18th, 1972 at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the Tuesday. You could check that. And there was a prayer meeting. We were pulling into the Philippines, and there was a library that we used to use for chapel. And I was praying with the other people that were there and certainly had known the gospel and had made prayers, to receive Christ. But at this particular time, it was something like the Apostle Paul experienced. Matter of fact, my wife met someone in an interview the other day who had a similar experience. And we were indoors in a library, and all of a sudden, there was a great light that shone about me. And I did not know anything about glossolalia, about tongues. Nobody was praying in my ear. And I got caught up in the spirit, and I began to speak in an unknown tongue, and I stopped because it frightened me. I didn't know what it was. And so there is such a thing as faith-seeking understanding. I understand what you're saying with Lewis, but Lewis also had an experience when he was riding on the sidecar of his brother's motorcycle to the zoo. And he said before he left, he was a theist, but when he got there, he was a Christian. And there's a great mystery. Jesus explains about how the wind blows. You don't always know when God gives insight, epiphany, and revelation. So, yes, you can do certain things that are rational. But for me, and I was in pursuit of the Lord, I understood who Jesus was historically, and I had even said a prayer in the highest peak I could find on Christmas Eve off the coast of Vietnam in 1971. But when I was encountered, kind of like Moses with the burning bush, I never forgot that experience. Now I've had valleys and I've had mountaintops. And so just like you talked about the near-death experiences, I believe, and as you stated earlier, and I reiterate it, you know, Satan is boastful, he's a showman, and certainly he wants to show himself even to a greater capacity than he really is, because Jesus defeated him on the cross. But God will manifest himself, and we see that on the day of Pentecost. Matter of fact, special speaker on Sunday.
Wait, I got to interrupt
you.
Hold it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're a Pentecostal, if you're an evangelican, yes, because you're receptive to that. But if you're raised a Baptist or a Catholic, no. Okay.
Oh, no, the Catholic charismatics, there's a phenomenal Catholic.
No, there are some charismatic Catholics, but the vast majority of them are not, okay?
May not. But what I'm saying, in celebrating Pentecost, God does manifest himself. And if people are really seeking God, and like I said, when you're serving the devil, you're going to hear those voices like Son of Sam and the dog spoke to me and this kind of stuff. You mess around with that stuff. But you also, you know, God illumines his word, but there are impressions. It's not like a voice or whatever. But, you know, God leads us. I told you before Ron passed away, and I said it in his funeral, the Lord gave me a dream. I saw him in a coffin. It's before he was sick. And I thought, well, maybe something in my life is dying. You know, you want to interpret it subjectively. But it was a prophetic dream. And then a couple of days before he passed, the Lord showed me him in a beautiful white robe, and he had his black hair and everything that he had before. And so there are signs and symbols, and God communicates, and he can talk in every language. And so if people are looking, not only in the universe, but all around us, the Lord will speak to us and communicate to us. But he can't hold us accountable if he hasn't made it clear. And that's why we preach the gospel.
Yeah, what I'm going to say is that, I mean, when we're talking about Christianity, most of the denominations will talk about a personal relationship with God, and I don't think most of them have personal relationships with God, or at least understand what they are. The Pentecostals, the evangelicals, they do, okay? In fact, growing up, we referred to the Pentecostals as holy rollers, and my worst experiences growing up, it was going to church with my mother's side of the family. And I mean, people roll it. When they say holy rollers, we're talking falling down and rolling around in the aisles. Okay. They're possessed by the spirit. I mean, that's frightening. Okay. Especially when you're a young kid. In my case, I have heard the voice. Okay, I've had some dreams, you know, the prophetic dreams. They're not prophetic or perfect, but they're the dreams that are like telling you where you are right now, like when I'm moving to a new level, and to have that dream that would tell. And it is you, okay, all right, for the listening audience out there. I mean, there's things that God is reaching out to us. But the secular world doesn't know how to describe it. So you may actually have a personal experience with God. You don't know it. And is Father Michael, who has coached me along in this, when we talk about confirmation, you're the one that taught me about confirmation. There's one thing, you know, like, well, I've had this, where you hear that voice inside your head. Now, keep in mind, there is a a scientific explanation for people who hear voices. It's called psychosis. It's
right.
a mental illness. But God speaks to us, and he speaks to us in a clear, distinct voice. And everybody I've ever talked to has heard that voice. It's your own. It's in your own voice. It's a thought in your head. But it
right.
is so clear and distinct you can't forget it. And it has a very specific meaning to you. Now,
yes,
there are cases
right. God knows
which,
how to speak to you.
Yeah, and there are cases like you're the one that told me about when you were called to go back in, to give up your congregation and become an Army chaplain. I love that was very inspirational for me. And because when I got sent, I got called to go to Iraq. The thing is, there's sometimes, most of it, it's out of the blue. And it's like, there's no doubt. This is God. This is someone trying to give you a message. But there's other times
right.
you're going, seems logical. This seems, and for me, going to Iraq, that seemed logical. I mean, yes, this is all this material I'm looking at does not make sense. The only way it's going to make sense is if I go to Iraq. That seemed logical. But it was an overwhelming feeling. And as you told me, if it is a message from God, you will receive confirmations. I received 3 confirmations on it. Same thing with retiring. I got 3 confirmations basically saying you need to retire 2 years early. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you are the coach on that. You're the one. And for we do have the time. For anybody out there who has these questions about, look, you know, I'm experiencing things, I'm hearing things or whatever. This is my coach, you know, Father Michael Pacella. Tell them how they can reach out to you.
Okay.
If they are having any experiences or they're dealing mm-hmm. with, they're struggling with the devil. You know, it's like, what is this? What's going on?
A couple of weeks ago, I offered to meet with people at our chapel for prayer that are in the Hampton Roads area. But I would welcome, and I have been communicating with one gentleman from Indiana, but if you write out the word St. Michael's Church, no apostrophe, the 14, which is 14, at gmail.com, I'm more than happy to share with anyone about, you know, testing the spirits. I've been reading lately how a lot of Muslims have been receiving revelations of Jesus. He's been appearing to them. But anything like that, but you can write the word saint out, S-A-I-N-T, Michaels, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-S, with no apostrophe, church, C-H-U-R-C-H, 14 at gmail.com. And I'm glad to answer any questions, you know, to anybody who has a question. We also have a website, and it's stmichaelscec.org. And it's right on the Internet. We have a beautiful web page. But these are real issues that some
of us
have been experiencing.
They
yes.
can also find you on Facebook if they type in
yes.
Michael Pacella, right?
That's correct. That's
I don't
correct.
Think there's a whole lot of but, Michael Pacellas out there on Facebook.
No, no. And yeah, and my son, but you'll see me as a priest. But
right.
I've been involved in this over 40 years, and so I'm more than happy to – and, you know, don't feel foolish like any of the things – that you're experiencing aren't real. I mean, some of them may be demonic, but some God may be trying to communicate to you. I haven't heard from anyone. I gave an announcement, and I gave a phone number, and I gave the email, because if there were any people in Hampton Roads, I just said, tomorrow night, 7 to 8, I would meet in my chapel just to lay my hands, just pray, whatever your issue are, just to meet you, if that were possible. But if not, everybody that's listening to us tonight can please email me with any of your questions, and I'm more than happy to answer them and give you coaching in that way.
All right, let me throw out a funny story. Okay, so I was a lieutenant and assigned to Germany, and they have the education center, and they get offer classes, high school completion, college classes, but there was this one, like, 1 or 2 hour lecture on witchcraft. Okay, and I'm like, ooh, this sounds interesting. I want to get, again, remember my mother was a fortune teller. See, here's the thing is, I remember, you know, I remember going to, when I was in the Army, going to Army chaplains, and I couldn't bring this up, and, you know, because not all these preachers really had any experience in it. And then this one, we had this one Army chaplain, Baptist background, and he was talking about the gifts. Remember, Paul wrote in Romans about all the gifts, mm-hmm. and he was preaching about that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. So he understands the spiritual side. So I brought this up. He was dumbfounded, okay? So really, I, you know, it's kind of like this is not something I could even talk to many of the pastors that I've served under, okay? But here it is, to this class on witchcraft. What turned out, the guy was, he was a legal historian. And his class was about the how they determined witches, which is, yeah, I mean, the whole process. He was looking at it from a legal aspect, and there was nothing legal about it. No, we're talking Europe.
No,
Europe, the European, which inspired the Salem. It's the same process, okay? It's the same process. But what's funny was, we're sitting there, it turned out everybody in that class went there thinking we're going to talk about witchcraft, and all of them had some kind of personal experience in this, because when we got into the, we would ask questions and he couldn't answer. He said, no, my research is into how they, you know, the trial process. And I'm like, well, and then someone would go, well, I had an experience similar to yours. And the whole conversation turned away from the instructor to everybody else. The point is, so many of us had these experiences, and like I said, I've rarely found any pastor, preacher, whatever, who could do it. Father Michael understands it. I have learned so much from it. I'm telling you, if you've got any questions about this, you know, these personal experiences with evil or God,
absolutely.
We got about 15 minutes, so let's keep going.
Can we recap a little bit of our major concern, which was motivation of hatred, and
I'm
what
saying
makes
evil.
A person...
You need one to say hatred.
Yeah,
I just want to say evil.
Yeah. Okay.
Evil.
Yes, I think that's good. But then what also motivates a person to be kind and loving and caring? Most of it comes out of what God has shown them. You know, the Bible says, you know, blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. And I'm just wondering, the way you were raised and I were raised, you were orientated to be generous, to be kind, to be helpful. Okay,
no,
so you had to beware. Evil things out there.
No, my mother was so mean. She had that Irish temper, okay? No.
Okay.
And there are times in my life that I have been crossed and I wanted revenge. But here, we had a previous, there's a show out there where we talked about forgiving.
Yes.
The thing was, I had to learn the hard way. I had to learn the hard way that holding a grudge. Oh, I know, we had the show, and you sent me that email and says, you know, what is it about the Italians? Because we both make jokes about the Italians and the Irish. It says, the one thing about the Italians is even after they have, what is, Alzheimer's, the last thing they forget is grudges.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately,
anyway,
that's the
truth. We can, joke about that, but here's the deal. It is, why are we supposed to forgive? Is because if we don't, it eats us up. And we live in this period time frame right now where we are so divisive, we can't even talk to anybody who has an opinion that differs from ours.
Yes.
That's right. Not good. If it's not good, then it's got to be evil. Okay? And we are given in to that. And the thing is, so why is it we have to be tolerant? Okay. So is intolerance a good trait or is intolerance a bad trait? I think everybody's going to say it's a bad trait. So it's evil. Tolerance.
But it's easier to hate than to love.
Well, it is. And that's the thing we know. It's easier to give in to evil than it is to give in to good. It is hard to forgive. It is very hard. But here is why we have to forgive. Because our anger against anybody does not do anything to them unless we get an AR-15 or a shotgun and a pistol, walk into a school and shoot people, then we have expressed our resentment. But that's evil. And you and I know anybody does it, you know,
right?
There's no turning back from that. You have totally given in to evil.
That's
but
correct.
As you talked about, you know, when Jesus mentioned that lusting for a woman is the same as committing adultery.
Right.
The thing is the desire, the same, what you've done is you've opened yourself up to the same evil. The only thing you haven't acted on it. So when we are angry at someone and we want to kill them, but we don't do it.
Yeah.
We have allowed evil to enter. This is the thing that where I'm at in my life is I'm now realizing that it is not the act. The act manifested, but it is the thought. Now I'm not a good person. I am a sinner saved by grace. Okay, so when I talk about this, it's not the holier than thou. I am a sinner saved by grace. Okay, I was Airborne Ranger Special Forces. Okay, I was a sinner. a little more needs to be said about that. And now, what Jake McGee, you know, if you read The Filthy 13, you know, about his wild days, and I remember some guy asked me one time, he's like, you mean he really became a lay preacher in his life? I said, yeah, and I told Jake about how that guy responded. He was shocked after all the escapades he did. And Jake told me, he said, all right. So anybody asks you that question, you answer it this way. I spent the first 32 years of my life sowing wild oats and the rest of my life praying for a crop failure. Okay?
Amen.
And the thing
That's
is.
Great. That's great.
I know.
That's the mercy of God, isn't it?
But the point is. Jake had such wit and such a sense of humor. But the thing is revenge, see, anything we do that allows evil to enter into our heart is taking us away from God. It's either light or dark, okay? Now, we do sin.
Can't afford that
commit
luxury.
Sins, we can be forgiven. Yeah, but the point is
people like
that,
to indulge and like to hate. And go through the calisthenics of resentment or maybe thinking about what they might do to someone, we are not allowed that luxury.
There you go.
The Lord says, vengeance
see,
is mine. I'm not
is,
talking about war, personally.
Yeah. Well,
there's
I believe all those mass shooters have given in to sin. They have the anger, they have sense of revenge, whatever it is, the motivation behind it is evil, and now they act it out. Why do we have to forgive? Because we got to let go of this, and we got to turn it into love, okay? And, you know, what I'm realizing is that all love comes from God, so that if we accept God's love, God's love is not going to hold grudges. And that's a hard
that's
one
correct.
To let go of. Really, really hard to let go, especially when there are people who have psychological damage from abuse.
Sure.
I get it. That's probably going to be the hardest thing to let go of. But the moment you get to where you can forgive the person who has hurt you, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Okay.
That's a real difficulty. I think I shared with you there was a guy who I felt was partially responsible for the death of our daughter. And I was processing that, and I thought, you know, I maybe need to go to the prison and tell him I forgive him. I was ready to shake his hand at the funeral, but he just bypassed me. I did shake his mother's hand. Of course, we had police detail there. And before I could do anything, though, he wound up dead himself. But I realized how important it was for me to let that go. We can't handle, only God can handle vengeance. We can't handle it. That's why God says, make room for me. I'll take care of things. That's why you talked about eternal justice.
All right.
Eternal punishment.
All right. All right. So what is that? What is that verse? What does God say about vengeance?
Vengeance is mine.
There's a verse.
Lord, I will repay. Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, outside of Christianity, we have a really good term for that. We can sum that up in one word, and it's called karma. Karma. Okay. Yeah. So for people who are dealing with that, struggling, let it go.
Right.
When you let it go, God's love flows through you. Life becomes a lot simpler. Took me a long time to learn that lesson. I held a lot of grudges, okay?
Light, but not darkness.
Yeah, there it is. But, and, you know, that's the point, is that when you realize good and evil exists, God, there's a devil, okay? So how do we know the difference? All love comes from God. Everything, you know, hatred, revenge, all this, ego, love of the world, that all comes from the devil. And then when we understand that, everything then begins to make sense, okay? And then you realize, like, I need to let go of this. I need to let go of my anger. I need, you know, I'm bitter over this person. But this, for me, it was totally rational. All right. This one person, a battalion commander, ended my career with one evaluation. And I'm sitting there going, and I hated this guy. But my hatred didn't do anything to him. He was going to go all the way to 4 stars. My feeling toward him was not going to change his in the lot of other people's career along the way. What I realized was I wasn't torturing him. I was torturing myself. That's a rational thought. When I finally realized I'm torturing myself, I got to let go of this. And now
a lot of people,
you go back and you read the Bible, it all of a sudden makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't come to that realization. I wonder if this young man ever thought of forgiveness. In other words, what was the real motivation beside the demons, you know, speaking to him and lying to him and deceiving him? You wonder if he ever thought, because they said he started to, you know, hurt himself, cut himself, wear dark clothes. I mean, all these signals that were happening, and who knows how much the devil was talking to him. But, you know, when you're talking about bullies, and I had a couple in my life, and I'm telling you, one was probably when I was 11, and one when I was in college. And there have been times that I've had to still go back and see those people, and it's like peeling an onion and still let that thing go, because I still, there's a charge there. There's still a feeling of deep hurt. And that's real.
You know,
and what you're saying is real.
All right, all right. For me, bullying made me a better person. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Why? Because I got into the martial arts. All right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to stand up to bullies. So,
right.
And I, because of that, my greatest passion right now is teaching martial arts. And that
mm-hmm.
all goes back
mm-hmm.
to being bullied in high school. All right.
Mm.
So it's not always a bad experience. I hold a grudge
right.
against those guys. Now, and now today, if I was to ever meet him, it wouldn't even be a fair contest because I'm like, we're all old. There's seriously, unless you've been training in the martial arts your whole life, you know, you odds are you guys are probably got all these, you know, injuries and ailments, right? Bullying made me a better person. It made me a better person. I extracted from that the idea that I need to be able to defend myself, and it set me, and I found something. See, martial arts wasn't just something I do. It's part of who I am. And there's several phases of my life.
You're a positive person, too. So you're a positive person, so you can see
that's
the importance of
No, you're
of
right. You're right. That is,
no,
I'm
are.
Guilty of that. I always look
no.
for the positive side of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And there's some people that are pessimistic and so negative, and they can't see any good. Here you can take a negative situation and say, no, I use that to my advantage, just like you're Aikido. It's very interesting, looking at the negative. I remember when I used to walk to school, I was a skinny little kid, and the wind was so strong, and I, you know, put my head into it, you know, leaned into it, so to speak, and I felt when I was a little kid, this is making me stronger, and I think just what you're saying is so true, that these negative things can make us better people.
No, it's true. It's true. I mean, like, why, you know, why does anybody want to go to Ranger School? You've got to be an idiot. I mean, you are punishing yourself for this tab that you can wear on your shoulder, right? But the thing is, that tab tells everybody else that you're willing to take a certain level of punishment
mm-hmm.
that most people can't do. Yes. Anyway, hey, we got
1 minute
left.
All right.
How do you want to sum this up?
Just like we normally do, just have a prayer, okay? Lord, we just thank you for the way we've been able to speak together about this important topic. We mourn for our country, Lord, for especially those parents that are grieving over their children. I understand what that means, but I just pray that you'll bring healing and love to our country, Lord, and that Jesus would find his way into the dark places because he's truly the light. I ask and pray these things in Jesus' name, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen.
All right. And thank you for listening. Anybody's got any questions about what we talked about, go look up Father Michael Pacello on Facebook or St. Michael's Church. Okay?
Amen. Thank you. Bye-bye.